No, it's fine. We did it this morning, no? So that's traditional second session of the day. Just generate correct motivation, of course. That's we try to do. So try to think in the same lines as we generate motivation this morning. For the benefit of all other transmigratory beings who are equal number of space, who have been so kind to us in all past lifetimes. So, yeah. We should be able to help them and should train our minds in order to be of more benefit. So that's why we're here, all the way up to enlightenment, right? So try to think that by understanding emptiness, we will be able to eliminate suffering, and not only suffering of yourself, but suffering of all sentient beings when it's motivated with bodhicitta. So try to generate this mind, wanting to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. For that purpose, have to understand emptiness. So that's why we're here. Yeah. Try to recall that motivation. Okay. So then, this morning we have more or less the same people, I think. This morning it looks like I didn't. I didn't scroll all the names, but it looks a little bit like that. So maybe a few, one or two, maybe different. But okay, so then that makes it easier for me as well. So this morning, what did we talk about? We talked about the importance of realizing emptiness from the point of view, even if you know, that quotation of Lama Tsongkhapa, even if you have renunciation, without emptiness, you will not achieve liberation. And without emptiness, even though you have the realization of bodhicitta, as we discussed this morning, you are not able to achieve the goal of enlightenment. Yeah, so you need one way, you need kind of a method aspect, that is either bodhicitta or renunciation, depending on which part you travel. Because the Buddha's teaching is twofold in the sense of, you know, it's there for the benefit of beings who aspire to achieve nirvana, right? Like become an arhat or sravaka, or Pajega Buddha. So there's two vehicles in the Theravada tradition or the Pali tradition, or yeah. So maybe, Dhammadhapa Rinpoche gave a very good term actually, because His Holiness Dalai Lama likes to avoid the term of Mahayana and Hinayana. Because Mahayana is great and Hinayana is lesser, right? So that's it's not a good term, actually. So Lama Dhapa Rinpoche told me that he uses Pratimokshayana. Very good term. Because Prati means individual, Moksha means enlightenment. Oh, sorry, liberation, right? So Prati means individual, Moksha means liberation. So individual liberation. Yana means vehicle. So that's a perfect term, actually, individual liberation vehicle. That describes the persons who like to achieve the state of liberation from samsara themselves, right? So that's the sravaka and the pratyeka, or the hearer and solitary realizers. They motivate themselves. They just have enough of samsara by contemplating the different types of sufferings with the 12 links, the Four Noble Truths, or the different numbers of suffering we classify in the Lamrim, you know, like 6, 7, or 8 different types of suffering. Yeah. So by having contemplated the different types of suffering, and then specifically when the Buddha says in the First Noble Truth, you should know suffering, right? Then he said you should abandon the cause of suffering. Then he said you should manifest the true cessation. And then he said, you should meditate on the true paths. So that means, first the Buddha said, this is suffering. And then he pointed out the contaminated aggregates, right? And then he said, you should know suffering. So when the Buddha said, you should know suffering, he didn't say the suffering of the coronavirus or cancer or any sickness. You know, that's quite easy to recognize, that kind of suffering, right? There's a suffering of suffering. Nobody likes to experience that. Yeah. So then we also have the suffering of change, you know, like this kind of beautiful weather. I don't know in your place, but we just today had lunch with a team in the garden of Jayan Center. And then if we're sitting in the shade, because in the sun it's too hot. But sometimes in the building it's a bit cooler, then you want to be in the sun. But then the sun is too hot, you want to be in the shade again. Then the shade gets a bit uncomfortable, you want to be in the sun again. So there's a suffering of change, right? That's also, we can, to a certain extent, we can realize. It's not that difficult. But when the Buddha said you should know suffering, he didn't say you should know the suffering of suffering, headache or the, one of the, you know, effects of the coronavirus, something like that. That's easy to recognize. And suffering of change is also easy to recognize. But the Buddha said you should know suffering, referring to the all-pervasive compounded form of suffering, right? So yesterday, I think we already talked about the contaminated aggregates, right? The aggregates that have contamination, meaning as long as we have karma and afflictions, right, we have this contaminated kind of aggregates of body and mind. Yeah. So until we have completely eliminated ignorance together with the seeds, yeah, we will never be liberated from this cycle of birth, sickness, aging and death, you know, then going to high states of rebirth, falling down to lower states again, you know, giving up the body, taking the body again and again, never being satisfied, you know. So meeting things you dislike and never meeting things you like, never finding what you're looking for. And it summarizes six or seven, depends which text, different types of suffering and the other classification of six. So that means that having contemplated these points, that's why Lama Tsongkhapa, in the two Lam Rims, the middle length Lam Rim and the Great Exposition, he says in short, as being the last type of suffering in those classifications, he said in short, having contaminated aggregates. That's a very very skillful way of putting it, because the Buddha said you should know suffering means not the suffering of suffering, like the suffering of birth or sickness, aging and death, right? That's quite easy to recognize. But that's why Lama Tsongkhapa said, in short, having contaminated aggregates. Because if you have contaminated aggregates, those that are created by karma and afflictions, right, then the cause for suffering is always underneath the surface, right? Now we're quite comfortable. Some people sit more comfortable than others, I can see. So that means that physically we're quite, you know, quite comfy. But underneath the surface, there is this cause for suffering. We just have to go out and meet a person who has the virus, you know, get it into the system. And then depending on many causes and conditions, you either get lesser symptoms or more serious symptoms, and some people will die, you see? So that means that underneath the surface, those causes are present. It's just a matter of the conditions are not met, right? So that means that as long as we have negative karma that come to ripening, and as long as we have afflictions that produces this negative karma, then we basically stuck in samsara, right? Yeah, so that's why Lama Tsongkhapa said, in short, having contaminated aggregates, that summarize this aspect of when the Buddha said, you should know suffering, because the all-pervasive component form of suffering refers to this aspect of having contaminated aggregates of karma produced by karma and afflictions. Yeah, so that means as long as we have karma and afflictions, we, you know, there's no way out of suffering. So temporary, of course, power of course and conditions to be quite okay, but that can always change. So that's why you have, you know, falling back and the uncertainty of samsara, right? Yeah, so there's many aspects to that. As you can see, you know, everything's so comfy in the world, you know, like before the virus started, everybody flies wherever they want to fly. It's so comfortable. It's kind of amazing, you know. And then all of a sudden it stops, you know. So that means that all amazing, but still only the surface, these kind of possibilities were present. It's just the conditions were not met, right? So it's a very good teaching. It's very sad that many people have to suffer. And that's also part of our contemplation on compassion, right? To see, you see the news, just contemplate, right? And then try to see that the people who are suffering, you know, is not, you know, people that, like many people in India who lose their jobs and have to walk all the way home, you know, it's not, that's the suffering of suffering, but that is rooted in karma and afflictions, right? So that's a deeper insight. So that's why Lama Tsongkhapa said in short. So that, if you have that insight, as we talked this morning, about which compassion is the strongest one, is the one by those who have realized emptiness, right? Or with understanding of emptiness, to have compassion is much more profound, as we saw this morning. Yeah, because you understand ignorance, and you understand ignorance can be taken away, right, with understanding emptiness. So that becomes a very profound aspect. Yeah? So to go back where we left, so the Buddha said, with the first noble truth, right, you should know suffering. So then the Buddha was referring to the all-pervasive compounding form of suffering. So all-pervasive means in the body, it pervades everywhere. You just have to put your finger in the fire, and there it is, right? Or your toe. So it means it pervades everywhere, or just underneath the surface, it's just ready to get sick. That karma is present, right? Yeah. So, and then we die. You know, that's going to happen to us. Like with the virus, it's kind of all the governments acting. You know, straight away. With the global warming, it's too far away. So they don't have to worry now. But basically, it's the same, right? It's just a matter of time. Yeah? So for our body, same thing. We human beings, we think like that. Oh, for the time being, I'm quite comfortable. And, you know, why should I worry about that? You know? But then slowly, we're getting older and older and older and older. And then things become more and more difficult. And then actually, you know, it's now only with the virus, some people start to realize what's going on. But there was already going on before the virus came into being, right? So yeah, so take it into practice by contemplating these points can be quite beneficial, you know. Just generate compassion for those who are sick, you know, and see the drawbacks of samsara. It's just a matter of meeting the conditions. Yeah, so that's why the Buddha said you should know suffering, referring to this all-pervasive form of suffering. So it's there wherever in our body and mind, just underneath the surface, whenever you meet a condition that triggers it, and that's it. So if there's no cause from your side, then external influence will not influence, right? Because there's no cause. If there's a seed, and you have heat, moisture, fertilization, it will grow. If there's no seed, although there's heat, moisture, fertilization, there will be no sprout, right? And the other way around, if there's only a seed but no conditions, also won't happen. So that's why we have a lockdown, because that prevents people from going outside, and the conditions of meeting others with the possibility of getting the virus, right? So you see, many is causing conditions. So then the Buddha said you should know all-pervasive compounding from suffering. This one aspect. Another aspect of the all-pervasive is everywhere within samsara, humans, or we talked about other beings on other planets. You know, I was just thinking when 2 weeks ago, I think, something like that. The Pentagon, they released a few videos of, you know, UFOs. I don't know if you saw that. You know? So there's, of course, living beings on other planets. So I was just looking at those things. It was interesting. And then some people, yeah, oh, wow, beings from other universe, this, that. But I was just thinking, you know, they same sentient beings, wanting happiness, not wanting suffering, and they also stuck in their cycle. You know? So that's not a big deal. Yeah. So that means wherever you are born, as a human, as a god, as an animal, everywhere it pervades. As long as you have these karma afflictions, there's this cause for suffering just underneath the surface, you know? Yeah. If not manifest. So that's the Buddha said you should know this point. You know, if you understand that aspect, then you can generate a real form of renunciation. Not liking to escape a job or to escape people, you know, sometimes people who are annoying or jobs who are difficult, we like to avoid. But then, don't worry, because you go to another direction and you meet a similar situation for sure. Yeah, there's no escape. You know? So that's what Shantideva said, cover your feet. You know? You cannot cover the whole world. So that means if you train your own mind, then external factors don't really matter that much. You see His Holiness having so many problems, you know, with Tibet and communities. It's not, it's quite difficult sometimes, I can imagine. But the mind is completely in control. If a decision has to be made, decision is made. If something has to be done, something has been done. If nothing can be done, then also no worry, because nothing can be done. You see? So that's a kind of attitude, you know. So then, wherever you are in samsara, as long as you have karma and afflictions, there's this problem of the possibility of suffering. You know? So that's why those who really contemplate this well, you know, they don't escape jobs or difficulties. They see the root cause of these problems, you know, and that is our destructive emotions, basically, right? And that together with inclinations and habituations, which we classify as karma, right? Or ripening effects of previous activities, you know. So that means those who really understand this aspect of suffering, they generate a wish to be free of that, right? Same with an addiction. If you don't know the faults of the addiction, you will never strive for means to get rid of that addiction. You know, so you have to use, that's another way why we have to use reasoning. You know, for example, I always find that quite striking when I came to the UK last year, because in India people use bedi. You know, bedi is kind of a little cigarette, homemade kind of, looks like homemade kind of bedi. I forgot the name even. Yeah, anyway. So you know what I'm referring to, right? Bidi, yeah. So so people smoke that. But there's no pictures on the packages because it's just kind of a leaf thing with a kind of sticker or something. So but here in the West, when I came into the supermarket last year for the first time, and I saw this kind of pictures of the lungs or other parts in the body full of cancer, and then it says smoking kills. You know? It's quite intense. But if you're a smoker and you see, oh yeah, that's not good for you, yeah, but anyway. Yeah? Then there's no reason behind looking at the picture and thinking, oh, it can happen to me as well, and using reasoning, understanding the issue, you know. If you use reasoning, understanding the issue, it's easier to stop. So that's why we use reasoning, you see. So same with this all pervasive compounding form of suffering, if you said, yeah, okay, not nice, then you don't really develop, right? But if you really contemplate these aspects, and then especially now with emptiness, if you see there's no controller or there's no self that helps you to save yourself, you know, there's just a body and a mind, and that's in cause and effect relationships, so you be more careful, you see, you understand. So that's why if you have insight into emptiness, also the renunciation will be much more profound. Yeah, this morning we talked about compassion being more profound, right? But see, same thing here. If you understand emptiness, then what Zuhn says, then you think, oh, liberation is possible. Why? Because you can eliminate the root cause of suffering. So you can eliminate the root cause of all pervasive compounding form of suffering, right? So the Buddha said, the second noble truth, the first one, you should know suffering, right? Knowing this all pervasive compounding form of suffering. Then he said you should abandon the cause of suffering. Second noble truth. So that means the direct, in Tibetan we say, the direct cause for suffering are the afflictions, right? The destructive emotions. But the root cause of suffering is this ignorance. So if you understand this ignorance with your understanding of emptiness, then your renunciation will be much stabler because you understand this all-pervasive compounding form of suffering together with the root cause, right? Yeah, so same thing there. We talked about having understanding of emptiness generating compassion, bodhicitta, right? But with renunciation, exactly the same thing. By really understanding emptiness, then you can see there is no self that protects you or, you know, is not influenced by karma and afflictions. It doesn't exist. So it's just a matter of where your continue goes in the next life, right? So that means that if you understand that aspect, it can be quite scary. You know, if you really meditate on emptiness correctly, and you come out of that emptiness, you know, contemplation, and it's like a little bit kind of, ooh, you know, there's no self, there's just the body and the mind, and it's just cause and effect relationships, there's nothing else that I can fall back to, you know? So it can be quite scary. So that helps us to understand real renunciation, because then you see, oof, you know, it's just a habituation pattern of moments of consciousness that, you know, that goes to the future, right? So then the more we habituate ourselves to these understandings, then you can see, oh, I should make sure that I get rid of these afflictions before it's too late, you know. And then the root cause of these afflictions is this ignorance. Yeah, so that's why we see that also, as the quotation we used this morning, Lama Tsongkhapa says, without kasa, although you have developed renunciation, but you haven't realized emptiness, right? Then you won't achieve liberation. Same thing. So although you have bodhicitta, but without emptiness, you cannot achieve kasa, enlightenment. So there's two things, right? The method, method aspect. Yeah. So with this either renunciation, wanting to become an arhat, wanting to be liberated from samsara, and the wisdom aspect, right? Yeah. So for bodhicitta, it's the same thing. You want to become a Buddha, bodhicitta method, and emptiness being wisdom. Yeah. It's like, now I don't see many planes, but normally it's quite busy track here over Jamyang. Sometimes we sit in the garden, you can almost see the pilot. Yeah. The other day, what are they called? The red arrows, I think they're called, right? The force who flew in, I think, 9 of them. I just heard them. I didn't know it was that particular day. But I was in a retreat, and I looked outside and only saw the colors, you know, red, white, and blue. So later on, I thought that I have to help my mother. She's in lockdown all by herself. So I took a screen, there's a word for that. Screen. Screenshot. And then I put a bubble, you know. Oh, Namdak, please give my greetings to mother. So I sent an email to mother. I said, oh, mom, Boris, the pilot, you know, he said hello. And he did a Dutch flag for you, you know, because it's almost like the Dutch flag. Yeah, so, yeah. So it's like a plane or a bird with two wings, you know. Yeah, so without the two wings, you cannot fly to enlightenment or liberation. So you need the method aspect and the wisdom aspect, right? Yeah, so, So that's why we need emptiness. For renunciation, pratimoksha jhana, right? So to achieve the state of liberation, only having the wish is not enough. You have to have... because same thing, when we talked this morning, tayata, it's as follows... Gate gate, para gate, para samgate, bodhisoha, right? So for the other parts who like to achieve liberation from samsara, same thing. The genuine renunciation, right? Uncontrived renunciation or the realization of renunciation. You enter the first gate, right? Or the part of accumulation, as we call it. And then at least on the second level of the part of accumulation, the person realizes emptiness. That's kind of many texts in the Abhijamalankara, you can study. Yeah. Though there are also who realize emptiness before, as we just discussed this morning with the Bodhisattva Jhana. Yeah. So, the Pratimoksha Jhana, for individual liberation, meaning they strive for liberation of themselves. Yeah. So, that's the Pratimoksha Jhana. Yeah. So, they also go on these paths and realize emptiness in the same way, part of accumulation, part of preparation. Then part of seeing and meditation and no more learning. Yeah, so at the time of no more learning, meaning in that particular part, they reach nirvana. Yeah. So they also need emptiness. Without emptiness, you cannot accomplish that. Yeah. So that's, Then, so we have already two scopes of the Lam Rim. This morning we talk about bodhicitta and enlightenment. Without emptiness, you cannot achieve enlightenment, right? That's the great scope of the Lam Rim. Then the middling scope of the Lam Rim, you want to become liberated from samsara, with only the wish is not enough. So you have to realize emptiness, right? So that's already the two scopes of the Lam Rim. Now I'll go backwards. And then also with precious human rebirth, you know, what's the cause of precious human rebirth? Is morality and prayers and other kind of conditions, or practicing other aspects of, you know, practicing patience as I said before, you know, and effort and those kind of things to get the right conditions. Yeah, but the main cause is morality, and of course, morality. What does it say? What we discussed yesterday: do not commit non-virtue. You know, practice virtue, subdue your mind thoroughly. This is teaching of Buddha, right? So, also in that context, in order to practice morality, You know, we have the morality of body and speech and of the mind, right? So initially it's easier to practice morality of the body, you know, not to punch a person in the face out of anger is easier, you know, to prevent than not shouting at the person, right? And you can still you can still prevent that. It's easier to prevent. Yeah? So, but to prevent shouting at the person is easier than not to have a negative thought towards the person, right? Yeah. So that means physical and verbal behaviors is easier to abandon than mental ones. You know? Yeah. So that's why the Buddha taught the Pratyamoksha vow. You know, the vow for individual liberation. Yeah. So that's we have for lay persons, for ordained. Yeah. This all falls under the category of the vow for self-liberation, right? Yeah, so that's why the Buddha very skillfully made that vow, or you can choose to take, you know. So that if you practice physical and verbal behaviors, if you practice physical and verbal behaviors, it helps you to generate or control the mind. Why? Because if you practice physical and verbal behaviors, you know, you cannot, you do certain activities, you promise, because they're negative, self and others. And you practice these two mental factors, right? Alertness and mindfulness. Yeah. So having alertness, oh, I shouldn't, same, or we can put it in day-to-day example as well. You know, you sit, you do a contemplation in the morning and you contemplate, you know, the negativities of, let's say, you know, verbal abuse or you know, saying nasty things to other people. Yeah, you contemplate that and you say, oh, good. And you realize that it harms self and others, and just one word or two words or a sentence can destroy a whole day or a week or a month or a whole relationship, right? So then when the moment comes, you're close to the person, then you think, oh, oh, now I should, you know, be careful because what I did in my contemplation this morning. So that means there's alertness, recognizing the situation, and with mindfulness, you think what you actually intended this morning, you see? So that is a kind of a way, with those two mental factors, alertness and mindfulness, we practice good behavior, you know, in our physical and verbal activities. If you have good behavior in physical and verbal activities, then with the mind to get to be able to meditate becomes easier, because those two mental factors are trained, you see? If you train your mind in physical and verbal behaviors with those two mental factors, they you train again and again and again, and then next time you do your meditation, you will be able to contemplate much better and concentrate much better. So that's why many meditators, they say, when they in retreat and they be very strict with morality, then meditation becomes easier. And yeah, you see in the forest tradition, in the Thai tradition, for example, a place like Sri Lanka, people were strict with Vinaya. They go into retreat and they get samadhi quite easily. You know, concentration, calm abiding. Why? Because calm abiding is being accomplished with those two mental factors, right? You have the faults of calm abiding and the antidotes, but the main antidotes, yeah, are these two mental factors. So if they trained with physical and verbal behaviors, then it comes easier for the mind. Yeah? So that's how it works. And then if you can train your mind well, then especially with understanding of emptiness, because we're talking about Prashyama Rebirth now, the less afflictions you have, the easier it becomes to practice morality, right? So it goes back and forth, you see? So that the more you understand emptiness, the more you can apply antidotes towards the afflictions. The more you apply antidotes towards the afflictions, the less harm you give to others and yourself, which is a practice of morality. And in that way, you create cause for Prashyama Rebirth, you see? So that here, all the three scopes of the Lumbarim, Prashyama Rebirth, liberation, enlightenment, you need emptiness. Sesa. That's how it is. So that's why, because every talk on emptiness, I have to get people ready, you see? So that's why yesterday I spent a whole afternoon in trying to get you ready. And this morning I got quite a few people ready, and now in the afternoon I have to keep people ready. You know, so that's why I start with this kind of introduction to make sure you understand why we have to study emptiness. Because if you study Lamrim, I said before, it's very logical and very structured. Why do I meditate on this? You have to know that, you know. If you know that well, you get inspired. Why do I meditate on death and impermanence? Why do I meditate on precious human rebirth? Why do I meditate on suffering? You should know that, you know. Otherwise, it doesn't come. If you're really convinced about the reason why, then you go for it, you see. Same with the parties I mentioned before. I believed, so to say, that it will bring me happiness, you know. Luckily, I didn't do too much drugs, so I was quite lucky in that regard. Now in Amsterdam, for my friends who were there on the screen in Amsterdam, I stayed a few times. Annelies and Annette, you know. So in Amsterdam, you can walk on the street, and you don't have to smoke yourself because all the people smoke for you sometimes, you know. So that means then there's no hardship, you know. If you're convinced in certain aspects of the Lamrim, you know, then why do I do this? Then you understand. And then retreat is easy and very joyful and beneficial, you know. I remember my first retreat in Dharamshala, 1995, I think. I just did a Kopan course. 95. I was just a monk, and I had only less than 2 months, and I had to do a Vajrasattva retreat before my visa was running out. So the first retreat was pretty intense, I tell you. And the first solitary retreat as well. So I got a bit of loom, they say. It's kind of tight heart, you know. So the retreat was not very beneficial. Then the next retreat I did, the same place, Tujita, I think it was a refuge or something. I was maybe too relaxed. Now I'm too relaxed with retreats, but it was very beneficial because, you know, try to be in silence, but when I met people, you know, it's difficult, like I'm silent, like that. Or write letter. You know, so I always find that more of a distraction than actually just talking, say hello and move on. So now I'm too relaxed, I think, in retreat, but if you're a bit serious and you make a schedule, you know, then it's very enjoyable, and then you get something out of the Lamrim if you do it together with these kind of prayers and practices, purification, acknowledgement of merit, pray to the guru, you know, those kind of things. Then it becomes very beneficial, you see. So that's why we have to know, why do I meditate on this point? So that's why I give you a sales talk. Why do I meditate on emptiness, you know? So wherever you go in the Lamrim, you need emptiness. Even day-to-day life, without emptiness, problems will come again and again and again, you see? So that's why emptiness is so important. So that's why, first step. Then we have interest. Every subject of a Lamrim is like that, right? Suffering. Why do I meditate on suffering? In order to understand the problem. And then a wish to get rid of the problem. You know, if we always avoid the problems, then we never solve them, right? So we have to understand, okay, what is the problem? Okay, can I do something about it? If it's yes, then the question is how, right? So with Lamrim, same thing. Why do I meditate on this? Oh, I meditate on suffering in order to generate a wish to be free of suffering. And then you see the suffering, and then next step, how do I meditate? Right? So the first step is why, next step is how. Yeah, so if you read, for example, Pabongka Rinpoche's commentary on the three principal aspects of the part, it's very clear. These structures, you know, why, how, and then in the end, if you finish your meditation, check if you produced, you know, the state of mind that should be produced from the meditation. Yeah, if you produce a mind after meditating on death and impermanence, and then you get really depressed and down, and the mind goes in lockdown from the point of view of not able to, you know, to move forward because you're down. I met a few people who said, yeah, I'm going to die anyway, so why should I make plans? That's just stupid, right? So, of course, you have to make plans, you know. What I said before, like the Kadampas, they look at the big picture and make plans for as long as you live, right? Yeah, so that means the meditation on death and impermanence should produce an effort of a mind that wants to do something about it, right? same it and do something about it now. Now we still have the opportunity to pressure human rebirth, you see? So same with suffering. We meditate on suffering, not to make us depressed, because some people think, you know, the Buddhist, you know, meditate on suffering and death. We don't like to think about death and suffering. We like to enjoy life. We like to have freedom. You know, so people think the real freedom actually is to be free of the afflictions, right? Not to have parties as much as possible. I think many years ago, I was still a student or something, they had this kind of project in the Netherlands that they have an isolated place and then people can do whatever they like in that particular place. And then they check, the scientists, what comes out. But actually, those projects were not very successful. Because if everybody does whatever they like, some have more afflictions than others, you know, like certain politicians we see on the news. So that means that if you just follow your afflictions, you know, not all politicians, but they've got very good ones as well, you know, but I'm just referring to one particular one, some country a bit further away. But if you just, you know, follow the afflictions, then that's only asking for trouble, right? So that means that to meditate on these points helps us to understand what is the issue and then do something about it, you see? So that's emptying the same thing. So that's why I spent spent some time on why, you know? That's very important to know, yeah? Because then we're getting kind of ready, you know? Yeah, so that's why to meditate on emptiness, you see? Probably the Buddha, same thing, you know? When the Buddha saw this, then he saw the suffering, you know? And then he saw this caused by ignorance. And then he saw, you know, I have to do something. So that's generated so much effort that the Buddha saw that over lifetimes, you know, he went to a lot of difficulties to accumulate merit, countless lifetimes. Why? In order to realize emptiness, eventually directly, you know? So that's why on the part of accumulation, preparation, the bodhisattvas, they accumulate so much merit for that purpose, you see? So that's why also for us, we shouldn't think that, that's why His Holiness often says, you know, look at that image what they have in one museum in Pakistan, you know, when the Buddha, with 6 years of austerity, also here we have the 12 deeds, so it's right here. Then you see the Buddha, how much hardship the Buddha went through, you know? It's very helpful. If you are difficult sometimes, oh, retreat's difficult, this, that, difficult, then just think about the Buddha, you know, the Jatakataka tales, just read, you know, or the masters of the lineage. When I was a bit down, sometimes in the monastery, when things were difficult, you know, because it's not always sunshine, it's always sunshine, basically, outside, but inside, not always the sun, you see. So then I was reading biographies, and then I read... sometimes, because it's 20-year program, you know, it's not something like, okay, just another... Ngume was easy. Ngume was just 1 year, so to live with 7 roommates and a roof that you have to adjust the tiles to prevent the rats or the rain from coming in. One rat was living in our... We didn't really have a kitchen. We had just had a veranda, you know, so outside. So we had bed to bed, you know. Yeah, it is maybe 5 centimeters between 2 beds, you know. And then you have half of a table for your books, because the other half is for somebody else, right? So conditions were pretty tough. And then we had a program for morning, sometimes not every day, morning like 3 till afternoon, 4, at pujas, when you just finish your lunch and the last spoon goes in and then you don't have time to wash your plate, for example. You have to go again. Yeah, so it's pretty, and then the evening still teaching, then debate. It's quite intense, and then living with, you know, few people together. So, but it was just 1 year, so you can push, you know, kind of, okay, so 1 year. Instead, it was a bit longer, so then sometimes I got a bit, you know, kind of, thanks to the blessings of the guru, I made it, otherwise probably I was lost somewhere else. But, so then sometimes when I got a bit down, I was reading these biographies, you know, or the stories of the Buddha. It's very inspiring, you know. So, for example, biographies of Varachana, Lotsawa, one of the great translators from the Nyingma tradition. Very inspiring. Stories of the Buddha, extremely inspiring, you know. Tathagata tells, then you see how much hardships they went through, you know. Naropa or Marpa, you know. It's very inspiring. And then our little problems we have sometimes in our comfort, you know, is kind of peanuts compared to what other people went through, you know. So, especially the Buddha, lifetimes, you know, lifetimes of dedication. So that's very inspiring, you know. Why? Because they saw exactly what we talk about now, the need to realize emptiness, you see. So that's why if we then think, oh, it's all too difficult, let's put it aside, you know, it's kind of a bit short-sighted. I was, you know, I'm still quite short-sighted, but I was also very short-sighted when I was young, became a Buddhist. It's kind of, oh, why should I study for so many years, you know? I did over at university, and, you know, maybe do everything in English and then do some retreat, and that's it. But my teachers told me, no, you're going to study and learn Tibetan, and then you go to the monastery and you do something more. So that's thanks to them I made it. So very fortunate. So, yeah, so we have to know why, the reason, you know. So emptiness is like that, yeah. So for presumed rebirth, it's great benefit. Practice morality. So in order to practice morality, you have to subdue your mind. Understanding emptiness helps us to subdue the mind. Renunciation, wanting to be liberated from samsara. Without emptiness, you cannot be liberated. Yeah. Bodhicitta wants to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. Without emptiness, you cannot achieve that goal. Yeah, the two wings of a bird. Yes, okay. So there we are again. Yeah, then I go and be more official. And wear my glasses and everything. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Look at that. So, yeah. So emptiness. So this morning, what did we do? We went over dependent origination, right? Yeah. And the three levels of dependent origination, the dependent origination of cause and effect relationships, yeah, and dependent origination of parts and a collection of parts, and dependent origination of mere imputation by the mind. Yeah. So I promised you to now talk about the other aspect is one and different. Yeah, I put those things also in that write-up you can read later on, or read it long rim, yeah, regarding these points. So, one and different. Yeah, so there's a very powerful meditation to understand, to see that itself doesn't exist, either being one or different from body and mind. Yeah, so, yeah, I just take some water. So that means, yeah, you see, a cup. You see, yeah. So everything that exists, this logic, this kind of epistemology in Buddhist philosophy, you know. So whatever exists is either one or different from the cup. The cup itself is one with cup. My body, the table, the computer is different from the cup. Right or wrong? Right. Yeah, there was a film by John Cleese, I remember, Clockwise. You saw that? It was right. He went to the railway station and then he asked, where is this train going to Manchester or something like that? And then the people on the platform said, on the left side, right? And he said, okay, right, right. And he went to the right side, you see? But here is a different right. So is a right of, you know, something is either different or one with a cup. So the cup itself is one with cup. Anything else than the cup is different from cup, right? So I said right or wrong, and then people do like this. So I suppose it's right. In India, sometimes people do like this, and they don't really know if it's right or wrong. Sorry, Minotti is there. Yeah, but I learned so much in India. You know, it's such an amazing place. I learned so much patience, you know. Sitting in a train and was delayed by 32 hours between Delhi and Bogaya. Gaya. It was a 12-hour train normally, and it took 40-something hours. So it was my record from Bangalore to Delhi, 40-something. So it was more than 80 hours in the train, you know. And you know the water conditions in the train, especially when you're 32 hours delayed and you reach the next... because we had an accident before and behind us, so we couldn't move for 12 hours. Luckily, the local people start to make samosa and chai, so it was quite nice. So then But then you learn so much, because you're there stuck in the middle of nowhere for not a minute or two in the West. I went to Somerset last year, a beautiful area. Cannot go this year, maybe later. And then the train was just stopping for a minute, and straight away, the conductor straight away making apologies, like sorry, and 1 minute, 1 minute later. So in India we were 32 hours later, and there was no apology or announcement, nothing. I was just there in the train, So you learn so much. It's like, okay, everything will work out eventually, and everything worked out. Only problem was that when we start rolling again, then we reach the coming stations, and the people were supposed to have a train every 24 hours, right? So the train after 24 hours after we left didn't come because we're still on the track. So then the people thought our train was their train, but actually it was our train. So it got a bit busy on the train, and then the water, kind of conditions are different. So you learn so much, And Indians are quite easygoing, Anyway, so why did I say that story? Because the cup. Yeah? So, or chai, that's what I miss. I drink coffee these days, but the real Indian chai, nice strong Indian chai, it's kind of gives you a kick. So everything that exists is either one or different from cup, right? That's logic. The table is different from cup. Yeah, the cup itself is one with cup, right? You follow? That's the first reason to be used. So the second reason, if it's one with, for example, same thing, the eye that appears. We look how it appears when we get angry, attachment arises, somebody criticizes us, or close to death. It's very solid. Eye appears. So, if it exists the way it appears, that's the question. So this morning we saw we couldn't find it because of interdependence, right? But now we check with the logic. Okay, if it exists the way it appears, it should be one or different from body and mind. There's no other possibility. Right or wrong? Now it's a little bit slower. I can see. Yeah. Laura does like this. It's logic, right? If it exists the way it appears, either one or different. Same as a table, it's one or different from our body and mind. Right? Yeah, so if the eye appears, if it exists the way it appears, that's the question, right? Then it should be one or different from body and mind. Okay? So that's the first reason, the first pervasion to be ascertained, as it says, or the first pervasion to be realized. Yeah, that's the first step. So, one or different from body and mind. So then you check, okay, it should be one or different with the body, or it should be one or different with the mind, right? So first you check with the body. Okay, the way it appears, one or different from the body. Is it one with the body? Then it should be many, because we have many parts in the body, right? So it appears to be one. You have to see, you have to know the object of refutation very clear. How does it appear? It appears to be one, independent. So it cannot exist the way it appears, because the body has many parts. It cannot be one with the body. You see? Yeah. So then you think, okay, maybe it's completely separate from body. Inherently separate, but then the relationship is not there. My arm, my leg, same as a dog and a cat, completely different. It doesn't feel like that. The eye appears to be sometimes called prasangika, mixed. There's different ways of how the object refutation appears, acquired or innate. We're talking about the innate appearance. That's the most important one, because that's the root cause, that's there since beginning of lifetime. So it seems to appear to be mixed, but seems to have a very concrete, from its own side, existing self. That cannot be one with the body, because there's many parts. That cannot be inherently separate, because we say my arm, my leg, my this, my that. It's not separate. we cannot find it separate. Or you put your body away, does the eye still appear like that? True. So it doesn't exist to be one or different from the body. Right? So then same with the mind. You check. Okay. So here you first you say, okay, what is object refutation? Comes clear to the mind, right? Appears. Then hold it. Corner of the mind. Then check. Okay, if the self exists the way it appears, should be one or different from body and mind. Right? First logic. You ascertain, or you realize, or you understand. It's true. You're convinced. Right? Okay, then next step. Okay, if it's one with the body, or different from the body. So next we saw it cannot be one because many parts and appears to be one. You know? So it's not one with the body. Then put your body aside, it still eye appears, it doesn't appear. You see? It's not inherently different from the body. No? First logic. Then, okay, then it's maybe one or different from the mind. You know? So then you check. So we talked about this morning, consciousness is just a flux of moments of awareness. You know? So in those moments of awareness, there's no same thing. There's many moments, many types of consciousness, but the eye appears to be one. So if it's and appears to be inherent all by itself. So if it's one with consciousness, it should also be many, because consciousness has many moments, consciousness has many different types of consciousness, sense consciousnesses, mental consciousness, mind and mental factors. So actually it cannot be one with consciousness, you know? So then we think, okay, maybe it's different, inherently different from consciousness. But same thing there applies. We say my mind, my feeling, there's a correlation between the two. So it cannot be inherently different from the mind. You see? You know? So that's why many meditators, they praise this logic. You know? Because it can be very powerful. If you have a clear picture of the object of refutation, and you analyze, okay, first step, you have the clear picture. Okay, if it exists the way it appears, it should be one or different from the body. Right? We analyze. Okay, no other possibility. That's only possible to be one or different. You're convinced. You know? Then next step. Okay. Check the body if it's one or different from the body. And you see, cannot be one because there's so many parts, you know? And the eye appears to be one. It appears to be existing all by itself. You know? Then you say, okay, maybe it's different from the body. And you see, there's no inherently different eye separate from the body. So also then not possible. You see, then already it's a bit kind of can produce a feeling of, oh, I'm losing something. Mm-hmm. So then you say, okay, but yeah, but then it's one or different. Maybe one with the mind. Let me check. Many moments in consciousness, so many aspects of the mind. It appears to be one, unitary, or it appears to be concrete, existing from its own side, mixed. But consciousness has so many aspects, you know? So actually, it cannot be one with consciousness, you know? So that may be different. I'm going to check. Then you say, my mind, my feeling, my that. So you put consciousness, it's more difficult than the body, but you imagine you put consciousness aside, or the stream of consciousness, and then you see if the eye still appears. But then it doesn't appear in that way, you see? So it's not inherently different. So at that time, the meditator, and has all the factors complete, accumulation of merit, purification, having studied well, having checked things with teachers back and forth, you know, discussions with other people, you know, then meditates and then checks if it's one or different, right? Then come in this process of seeing object refutation, okay, if it exists the way it appears, one or different, body and mind. Check the body, not one, not different. Check the mind, not one, not different. So we have the first insight that it should either be one or different. So then at that time you see no one and different from the body, not one and different from the mind. It doesn't exist, you see? At that time a meditator can just a little bit be shaken up and then what Jason Sarah Senge did is like, you know, holding this one, you know? Yeah, so at that time the meditator can have a kind of insight. That's why it's holding says like lightning. Shocking. So there's different bodhisattvas or beings who realize emptiness before. Or sorry, you realize emptiness for the first time. You know, so certain bodhisattvas with a huge accumulation of merit, you know, then they get so blissed out when they see emptiness. They get so happy. They get so happy they never have experienced before, because they found something they were looking for such a long time, meaning the absence of inherent existence. You know? Because since the beginningless lifetime, we believe inherent existence to be true. And now, finally, we see it doesn't exist. And it's very funny, because that appearance of an inherent existing I, mine, doesn't exist, but is the cause of all the problems, you see? So then you can imagine, if you see that, have that insight, you're so happy. Because now you see it doesn't exist the way it appears, and now it's the starting point of getting rid of all these problems of the afflictions, you see? So certain bodhisattvas with a huge accumulation of merit, they get so blissed out and happy, you know? Certain bodhisattvas with lesser merits, still much more than us, or beings not bodhisattvas yet, you know, realize emptiness the first time, they can get the shock to the system, you know? But that is very good, actually. Also, Master Sayadaw, I mentioned this morning, I think, in the Burmese tradition, he also says, you know, the meditators generate some fear, but they want to go back to that meditation. Why? Because they see this is solving all the problems of the afflictions. So that's why there can be sometimes a little bit of uncomfortable feeling. Then for the majority of us, I don't know about you, but because I don't have clairvoyance to know where you are and what you, I can only see you on the screen with direct perception. That's the thing I have, the only knowledge I have of you. But you can imagine that, like us ordinary beings, take myself an example, then, so then emptiness is still very complex, and we don't get it because we're lacking the conditions to get it. You know, so that means we have to work on those conditions, study, discuss, accumulation merit, purify, seeing the in the Vajrayana practices, or seeing the Buddha's one with the teacher deity. You know, so there's many practices. Lama Tsongkhapa was advised by Manjushri. You know. So Manjushri is very interesting. When Lama Tsongkhapa was such a scholar, he had thousands and thousands of students. You know, he was teaching the Dharma in big picture, amazing benefit. So then Lama Umapa, who was initially the translator between Manjushri and Lama Tsongkhapa, Lama Umapa was a bit concerned, because Manjushri told Lama Tsongkhapa, hey, you want to realize emptiness? You do one thing, you know? You go in retreat, you do accumulation of merit, purify, seeing the deity as one with the teacher, make strong supplications, and you meditate on what you've studied, the great texts of the Indian scholars. You know? So then Lama Tsongkhapa did that, went into retreat. But Lama Umapa said to Manjushri, so Lama Umapa could see Manjushri like you and like people here in the hall. You know. So then Lama Umapa said to Manjushri, yeah, but Manjushri, what do you think? Lama Tsongkhapa benefits thousands of people at the moment if he goes into solitary retreat. What will people say? Then Manjushri said to Lama Umapa, you do one thing. What's most beneficial for the Buddha Dharma? I know. And then what other people say, you practice patience. You know, very interesting comment. So that means that, then Lama Tsongkhapa went to the retreat and then he realized the view. You know? Yeah, very inspiring. And that's why if you read the biography, very inspiring. So that's why those biographies, you know, in Tibetan we say Nam Tar. Nam Tar means liberation, you know, aspects of liberation. Meaning, if you read a biography of those masters, you get inspired. You get inspired to follow the same footsteps to liberation and enlightenment. So that's why in Tibetan, they don't be called biography or something like that. They're called, you know, aspects of liberation, Namtar. Very, very, the word itself explains basically what it's all about. Yeah, so that's why those biographies are very inspiring. And then also we see how to do it. You know, and then we inspire, make prayers, we study, you know, then things start to move, you know, accumulation merit, purify, you know, make strong prayers if you have a teacher or something like that, then things will go in a particular direction, you see. So that's why those aspects are very important in order to understand emptiness. Of course, on the kind of logistic, you know, from point of view of logic, is not that difficult if you have a little bit of intelligence to debate it back and forth. You know, His Holiness said many times to the monks, not only clapping your hands, you have to sit and meditate on emptiness. You know? So that's a bit more difficult than just clapping your hands. You know, I said before, to defend Prasangika is not that difficult in debate, because it's so black and white. Nothing exists inherently. Bas, you know, nothing else. But to really understand what is that merely imputed by the mind, what is that level of interdependence, what is that emptiness, it's a bit more complicated. Yeah, so that's why we have to study. So that's a little bit of a summary of the other reasoning of one and different, right? So those two sets we discussed this morning of the three levels of interdependence, and this afternoon about one and different, they all rooted in Chandrakirti's supplement to the Middle Way. You know, so they come from there's one chapter called Kansaridharmila Tempa, means kind of the logic that is behind realizing the selfness of a person. So yeah, so there has been very clearly explained, and the root of that is actually this chapter number 18. You know, it's a very moving chapter. That's why it's only stolen quite a few times. You know, it's very because probably, I'm not 100% sure, but it's very much related to the verse from Buddha Palita to the first verse in that chapter. So that means where it says, if the self were the aggregates. Yeah, so we go to the text, people are okay or not? People are freaking out or not? Yeah? Because there was a plan, you see, to go over the text. Yeah. Yeah, chapter 18. Yeah, you can see. You have people have a copy, print out, or on kind of whatever you have it. Yeah. So this chapter, it's short, but it actually deals with the most important points of philosophy of emptiness, very condensed. And that's why it's so important. That's why His Holiness always goes back, like the tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, to the root of our teachings, of course. The Buddha's teachings on the Prajnaparamita, right? So there was one question in regarding with the three wheels of the turning of the Dharma. You know? So first the Buddha taught, as you know, in Varanasi, you know, just out of Varanasi Sanat. It's a bit debate why exactly the place is, you know, it's some people say the stupa, but many people, when I was with Geshe-la many years ago, 1997, I think, with Maitreya Institute, we had a pilgrimage. My parents also came along. My father was still alive. And we went also to Sanat, and then Geshe-la actually pinpointed out another place where probably the Buddha taught, just down in the ruins, you know, for the first time. So there the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, we just discussed. You should know suffering. You should abandon the cause of suffering. You should manifest the true cessation. And you should meditate on the true paths. Yeah? So that's the Buddha taught in Varanasi. So that was more a teaching, a general teaching. Yeah, that was more or less for the general kind of, you know, future Buddhist practitioners, so to say. Yeah? So then, later on, Rajgir. Some people maybe visit Rajgir in Bihar. Yeah, so this kind of mountain. And on top of that mountain, there's a place where the Buddha taught. And then all the arhats and, you know, the people, realized people were in the sky, you know, flying around, receiving the teaching of the Buddha. It's very interesting. Rajgir, a very interesting place. Even, I think, the 13th Dalai Lama, when he came to, or the 6th maybe, not sure. My mind is like a sieve. When it comes to lyrics of pop songs, or house music, rave, I was into the rave hardcore house music, I can remember exactly the rave. There's not many lyrics, so it's only one lyric every 3 or 4 minutes, so that's easy, but I can remember that very clearly. But when it comes to the Dharma, it's like a sieve. So I think it's the 3rd Dalai Lama, maybe, who came in pilgrimage on the 13th, I'm not sure. And I think maybe or 6th. I think 6th, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, one of the Dalai Lamas who came to India for pilgrimage, you know, went to Rajgir, and just before entering the hill, He said, I cannot go up. It's full of the text of the Prajnaparamita. I cannot walk over the text. You see? Such a pure vision. You know? So, we ordinary people, we just see rocks and, you know, rocks and pot, you know, cave. That's what we see. But actually, he saw, you know, texts, the whole mountain. You know? Well, it's not a real mountain, it's more a hill. But yeah, so at that point, the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago the Prajnaparamita, you know, something like the Heart Sutra, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. Exactly that spot. Yeah, so that's more or less a view of, you know, the middle way view of Buddhist philosophy. Well, Sanat, the first turning of the wheel, was more or less a general one. Some we can say Pali tradition, maybe, you know, mainly referring to, it doesn't pervade though, mainly referring to Sartantrika and Vibhasika. You know. Of course, there's also interpretations from other schools of Buddhist philosophy, but mainly that. And then the second turning in Rajgir, then the Buddha taught mainly according to the Majjhimika, right? And then at the third turning, he taught mainly according to the mind-only school. So at the first turning, we say the Buddha was mainly teaching the Four Noble Truths, and the truth of selflessness of phenomena was less taught or hidden, they say. At the second turning of the wheel, the Buddha taught the hidden meaning, yeah, of the ultimate nature of reality. Yeah. But at the second turning of the wheel, the Yujin, the object possessor, or how we say that, Kasa, the mind realizing emptiness was hidden. You know, he only taught emptiness at the second turn. On the third turning of the wheel, the Buddha taught about the mind realizing emptiness. You see? According to mind only, or according to the Vajrayana, or according to the mind that realizes emptiness, you know, object possessor. That's, and then of Buddha potential, those kind of things related with that, he taught on the third turning of the wheel. So his interpretation is possible. That that relates to the Vajrayana, or that relates to the clarity or the clear light mind, or the mind only school interpretation of mind only. Yeah? So yeah, we don't have time to go into details, but yeah. So there's a third turning of the wheel. Yeah? So then during the second turning of the wheel, we taught the Prajnaparamita. So Nagarjuna wrote this commentary, Fundamental Wisdom. Yeah. So one of the main important chapters is this chapter number 18. So they know where it comes from, right? The Buddha, and then Nagarjuna wrote this commentary, and this commentary, as you can see, is not that easy to be understood, and many different interpretations can happen or are possible. Yeah, so that's why after Nagarjuna wrote this text, then Buddhapalita, he wrote this commentary, you know, actually a commentary according to Prasangika, but not that clearly set out. At that time the tenets were not that clearly defined. Yeah. Then Bhavavika came, who was the upholder of the Svatantrika view of Madhyamika, and he wrote a commentary and had some comments about Buddhapalita, right? So then Chandrakirti came, and Chandrakirti clarified everything for us. Just spoon with some very nice food, just like that. That's Chandrakirti's kindness, you know? We just have to only, you know, put it in the mouth, chew a bit, and swallow. It's, without Chandrakirti, it's very difficult to realize emptiness, because he made a distinction. Okay, Nagarjuna said this, you know, Buddhapalita says this, and the meaning is this. Bhavavika says this, because he has this and this interpretation. But the real understanding is like this. It's so, so profound. You know? So that's why, if you have time to read the works of Chandrakirti, there's a few things translated. You know? It's amazing. You know? It's very, very clear. And that's, we can find not only in Kaluk, also in other teachings, you know. So, yeah, but it all started with Kasa, with this, you know, this text of Nagarjuna. So, maybe I explain a few verses for auspiciousness. It's maybe not enough time to do everything. Yeah. So, the first verse, if the self were the aggregates, it would have arisen and ceasing as properties. If it were different from the aggregates, it would have the characteristics of the. It would not have the characteristics of the aggregates. We just discussed one or different, right? So if it's one with the aggregates, then it should also have law of cause and effect, you know, and being impermanent, momentary, changing, but it doesn't appear like that, you see? And of course, it doesn't have, it appears to be one, as we saw, and the aggregates are many. You know? Then, if it's different, inherently different, it will not have the characteristics of the aggregates, like a dog and a cat, for example. Right? They're exact, totally opposite from each other. And it doesn't appear like that. And so that's we just discussed. That first verse relates to one and different. Yeah, where we just did that logic. Then, number two. If there were no self, where would the self's possessions be? From the pacification of the self and what belongs to it, one is free from grasping onto I am I. So that means the self or the self's possessions, the self is referring to I, self's possessions is referring to mine, right? So that's how the mind of the view of the transitory collection apprehends, you know, I am mine. So the view of the transitory collection is basically the most subtle interpretation of ignorance, according to Prasangika. So what is this view of the transitory collection? Transitory mean momentary changing, right? Our body and mind are momentary changing, right? Right? Ra, re. In Tibetan say rea, and then you say re, la re, means yes. View of the transitory collection means it views the momentary body and mind, yeah, it focuses upon this, yeah, mikne, mean to focus upon that, yeah, and then it thinks it exists, or on top of that, it apprehends itself inherently. You know, that's the view of the transitory collection, roughly translated. You know, so by focusing upon the five, the collection, the mere collection of the five aggregates, it apprehends itself to exist inherently, you know? So that's the view of transitory collection. As I am mine. That's the last line. Yeah? So focusing upon the aggregates, you know, the mere collection of the aggregates, you know, it thinks or it apprehends that there is a self existing inherently like I am mine. You know? So yeah, that's what it actually talks about here. So in the last two lines of that verse, it actually teaches us how to oppose this view of the transitory collection. Because if you see that particular self, as we just discussed, one and different, or yesterday, I'm sorry, not yesterday, this morning, right? Yeah. See, I'm always starting forgetting. So this morning we talked about dependent origination. Yeah. So also that proves the self cannot exist the way it appears. You know? So with those two faults or two types of reasoning, you can also combine them together. You know? Then you can see it doesn't exist the way it appears. What? This I am mine that we apprehend as existing from its own side by focusing upon the aggregates, right? So that self doesn't exist, as we just discussed. So if you see it doesn't exist the way it appears, you cut this kind of view of the transitory collection. You cut ignorance. Yeah? Yeah, that's verse number two. Then verse number three is a debate. Yeah? So that's a person who says, one who does not grasp onto I am I, that one does not exist. Yeah? So one who views non-grasping onto the I am I, he or she does not perceive the reality. That means if you don't recognize the object of refutation, you know, how the I appears, if you don't have that picture clear, you will never really understand what is the conventional I and what is actually emptiness, you see? Because if we don't have a clear picture, then we might think nothing exists at all by analyzing, oh, nothing exists. But if you have a clear picture, how does the I appears, and then see it's either one or different, come to conclusion it doesn't exist the way it appears, there you go, you get it. You know? So that's here, verse number three is a debate. Yeah? And the debate, actually the conclusion is, if you don't see the object of refutation, you won't be able to see reality. You see? So that's what Lama Tsongkhapa, in this, most of his works, he says, recognizing object refutation, you have spent most of the time initially on that point. Then a little bit of reasoning, one and different. Then go back again. How does it appear? Then hold that. Then keep it clear. Then again the reasoning. You see? Yeah. Because it fades away easily when we start analyzing. Yeah. So that's verse number 3. And then that's a very important point to know, the importance of kasa, object of refutation. Yeah. Then the answers from verse number 4 onwards. Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. Some of the lamas, I met some great teachers, they so in just sometimes sit in the room. They have studied so much. And they're just nothing on the table. They sit like that, meditate all day. It's really inspiring. Ganti Rinpoche, for example. You go to see Ganti Rinpoche most of the time. Sometimes it's just mandala, so, yeah, but otherwise, very rarely. So a lot of meditation. But then sometimes reading a lot, you see? So that's the combination of the two. Study and serious thinking. Kuchchudu Rinpoche, great masters, we were very fortunate because we just lived on the other side of the road. Yeah, the same thing. So many times I've studied. Inside me. Yeah. Yeah. It's really inspiring. Yeah. He did this 19-year retreat, I said the other day, right? In a room in Lhasa. Very inspiring. He used to memorize. I mentioned the other day, Lama Tsongkhapa wrote these two volumes on the commentary of the Abhishamanakara, which is kind of, you know, in Tibetan two, these thick books in English will be like that. So he memorized those two, next to all the other texts he memorized. And then Kuchchudu Rinpoche used to do retreat, and he used to do the memorizing practice before starting the retreat, everything from the mind. So that means in that 90-year retreat in Tibet, he only had one mala, nothing else. No statues, no altar, no texts, because he already memorized everything. Then he came out of the retreat, then His Holiness asked him to start teaching again. Luckily he made it to India, and he taught. Still everything there, mind-boggling, you know. Ganti Rinpoche, same thing. Ganti Rinpoche is... When I study Madhyamika, you know, these kind of things, I went because I had some connection and I did some translations for a few of his students. So amazing teaching sometimes, just privately almost. So then sometimes I went up, you know, to clarify things in Madhyamika, and just debating, you know, Ganti Rinpoche. Then when I studied Vinaya and Abhidharma, I was a bit afraid to go to see him because my mind is like a sieve, right? So with logic in Madhyamika, you can do a little bit. You know? But with Abhidharma and Vinaya, people don't really understand maybe, but you have to memorize so many divisions and definitions, and it's all over the place. And there's also books like this thick, you know? So my mind being like a sieve, even the things we are debating at that time, Ganti Rinpoche, he didn't look at a text for maybe a decade or two, you know? But still, exactly the quote, the interpretation, everything is just like so fresh, you see? So that's the incredible potential of the mind. It's very inspiring. So those things are very inspiring to see, you know? And especially with these kind of aspects of study, you know? Ganti Rinpoche, I translated for so many precious teachings, etc., for the Westerners who came. For Kuchchudu Rinpoche, so many cycles. Then for Ganti Rinpoche, gave teachings. Everything he said was proven with a quotation. And then he just said, okay, you guys know, right? Because it says here, this, this, and this. And I was translating and I heard a quote for the first time, right? So I was a bit freaking out. And it's very tiring. But it's so inspiring because you can see that's the capacity of the mind. You know? Mind like a razor blade. Knowing, understanding, and then the practical aspects as well, you know, explaining the text, and then, okay, but also from point of view of practice, you can do this because of this, this, this. So always going back to the authentic source, you know, so that's why we do Nagarjuna, I thought. Yeah, it's very inspiring. Yeah. So where are we? Did I read number 4 or not? Did I read it already? Huh? Not yet, no? No, sorry. So it reads, when does the land, or the answer to the doubt of number three? Yeah. So then it says, when the views of I and mine, you know, have been taken away and extinguished, yeah, whether with respect to the internal or external appropriator ceases. You know, we talked about the contaminated aggregates that propels us in future existence. Yeah, that stops. Nyeva lemba kakpas, it says. So it means that what, you know, is by the power, is also a very good term. Le nyung shenwang chen, Tibetan. Le means karma. Nyung means nyumong, it is affliction. Shenwang chen means order powered. Or by the power of something else than itself. It's a very strong term. Because it means we are propelled by karma and afflictions. Beyond control. There's not a translation you can do. So shenwang, yeah, without capacity of ourselves. So if you meditate that we bound, you know, if you study the three principal aspects of the part, you know, there's a verse of generating bodhicitta, remember? That sentient beings are bound, you know, tied together, arms and legs, and then they're in this cage in a river going. You know, so then, you know, being in the river is a suffering, right? Being bound by, you know, different kind of metal, I would say, ropes, is kind of karma and afflictions, right? You cannot, you're in this river of suffering, and you cannot escape, you see? So even though, if you subdue your mind to a certain extent and purify negative karma, you're still in this iron cage of ignorance, you know? So you can still not escape. So that's why it says here, if you eliminate that aspect of ignorance, then karma and afflictions, as we saw, you know, even if you have realized emptiness, then though there is feeling, but there's no craving and grasping, right? We discussed, remember? When there's feeling, we don't grasp or crave for it, because emptiness is been understood. And if emptiness is understood, those afflictions don't arise, because there's no ignorance. You see? Yeah. Yeah, with respect to the external... Yeah, so that verse 4 actually explains the thing we already discussed in the 12 links, right? That if you understand emptiness, you eliminate karma and afflictions, yeah? Especially with direct perception of emptiness. And that's the end of samsara, you know? So that's a very positive thing. So it's very inspiring, you know? I don't know if you find inspiring, but I do. Yeah. So His Holiness also said, no, if you... It's so inspiring. When His Holiness talks about emptiness and bodhicitta, it's so inspiring, because His Holiness has, you know, realized it, and then said, from his own experience, you know, if you understand emptiness, you think liberation is possible. You know, if you have bodhicitta, you think if you work hard with effort, realizing emptiness, you get there. Very inspiring. Very inspiring. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so then the other verses are very similar ones. Lama Zogar Kyabche, Lama Zogar Rinpoche, he gave teachings in Sera, you know. And so many monks scattered. It was like full house in Serje assembly hall, packed. And Rinpoche, he was requested to give an explanation on the 8 verses of mind training, you know, 8 verses, very short. So then Rinpoche, instead of starting with the text, he talked about morality, good devotion, for a long time. And then towards the end, Rinpoche said, oh yeah, people asked me to give the explanation of this text. Then with 2 sentences, he explained the first verse, and he said, all the remaining verses, like a prayer, is the same, and then he just rushed through. Yeah. So I feel I'm doing the same thing almost. Not, I don't have any qualities, but, you know, rushing through the last part. Aspect. But once Rinpoche gave also initiation, and the first day it didn't happen, and you could see the monks, they never expected like that. Most lamas are very punctual. Kushchev Rinpoche was so strict, he should stop on the minute, you know? Very inspiring. Rinpoche has a completely different approach. You know? So in the monastery, he's quite on time, generally speaking. the transmissions we organized in Shati Council a few years, because the monks have to go to debate everything. So the schedule has to be there. But then once in the monastery, there was a free evening, I think, two free evenings. And then Rinpoche was planning to give Haiku Rinpoche. First evening didn't happen. So that sort of monks very uncomfortable to be promised something and it doesn't happen. And then Rinpoche said, oh, I do tomorrow. So then the next day, same thing. Almost same thing. So then we have a kind of Maitreya statue, you can see, but we have one on that side. So also in the temple on that side. So there's a kind of five-colored kata around Maitreya like that. Behind the glass. And then Rinpoche was teaching. Rinpoche, of course, facing the audience. Also facing Rinpoche and the kasa, the altar. And then all of a sudden that five-colored kata starts to burn in a beautiful flame. So Rinpoche, he knew what's going on, but Rinpoche had full control. He's teaching, everything serious. So the abbot was looking, what's happening. And then the temple caretaker was like, whew, 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 getting behind the glass and get rid of the fire, So he did it. And then Rinpoche, he made a comment. He said, oh, frightening, right? And he said, but very auspicious, very auspicious. And then he told the story of in Tibet, there was a tanka of Maitreya, and then everything burned except the brocade and the tanka. So, yeah, so those things happen sometimes, yeah. Anyway, I'm telling too many stories because it's getting tougher and tougher. So I have to keep people relaxed. And that's why sometimes stories help. And it's inspiring to know the stories. Yeah, anyway, I find it inspiring. So then the remaining verses, if I read them all, then people get bored, I think. Basically talked about similar things as we just discussed. That there's just two reasons, right? One and different, and interdependence. And there's another reason of Chandrakirti, inherently possess the aggregates. The self, doesn't inherently possess the aggregates, it's number five. And then, six and seven, one is kind of, the aggregates themselves are not kasa, not the self, and the shape is not the self, right? So that's all the seven to make it complete. So the last two are very coarse forms of a self. Yeah, that is not the aggregates, that's kind of basically an acquired form of grasping at itself. And the shape is not the aggregates. It's also easy to realize that that's not true, because the shape of the car is not the car, right? Right? Yeah, it's even more than that. The shape of the body and mind is not the person. Yeah, so that's the complete seven kasa, sevenfold reasoning of Chandrakirti. But among the sevenfold reasoning, the things we discussed are mostly meditated upon. Right, because if you meditate in that way, you get slowly an understanding of what the self actually is not, and what is it. In Tibetan, in debates, we learn a lot of what is not. It starts in the first year, not pot, not pillar, not cup. We don't use cup or table. We only use pot, pillar, and what else? Just very, very dry examples, But it helps. Logic, not this, not that. Or you can say, if you say not cup, means something different from cup, right? If you say not cup, it means cup. Or if you say not opposite of cup, means cup. So you can go like not opposite of not cup. What is that? So in debate, you have your mala, then you calculate the opposites, you calculate the not and the not. And then you know the answer. And then the longer the the not opposite of not is, more time it takes. Yeah, so anyway, there's logic, Yeah. But it's important to know, because if you exclude things, you start to learn what it is, right? Yeah. So emptiness is actually what we called a non-affirming negative. That means if you realize emptiness, it's not that something comes instead of the inherent existing self. The self appears inherently. It's not that it goes out of the door being inside before. It's not like that, because it never existed. Right? So that's why we say it's a non-affirming negative. like the emptiness, I always say the emptiness of the elephant in the room. Here in London, I say the London Eye, yeah, because it's that famous thing, you can go around, you know, you have to pay a lot of money these days, I think, but you can go around, you know, how do you call the thing? The London Eye normally is kind of, yeah, anyway, you know what I'm referring to, yeah? You can see all the pictures, yeah, the tourist. That's Radek, one of my friends here in London. He took me for the first, I was just a week, I think, or 2 weeks here. He took me for the touristy track. So also we saw the London Eye. The first time I saw it. And the second time I saw it when my mother came last November. So I did two tourist trips already in my, staying in London. Yeah, so, so this room is empty of the London Eye. Right, your room is empty, you know, of an elephant, I suppose. Yeah, yeah, no elephants in the rooms. Okay, so all your rooms are empty of an elephant. So the emptiness of the elephant, or the absence of the elephant, is kind of a permanent phenomenon which we call a non-affirming negative. Right, nothing comes instead of that. You know, it's just a lack of something. So emptiness, same thing, is just a lack of something, which means the lack of an inherent existing self. Right? So that's very important to know, because when you meditate on emptiness, one and different, then it should be a void that appears. When you see, okay, how does the eye appear? It's not one, it's not different, it doesn't exist. So at that time, it doesn't exist, a kind of voidness should arise to the mind. Not like, oh, now I meditate on emptiness. Oh, this is emptiness probably. Then it doesn't have the power to eliminate ignorance. Why? Because every affliction needs an antidote that is exactly the opposite, right? Like love and kindness, or liking person A, is the opposite of disliking person A, right? At one moment of time, you cannot like person A and dislike person A at the same time. Right? It's not possible. Of course, over time, one day the person says something nice, you like. Next day the person says something nasty, you dislike. That's possible, right? But it's two different minds. One mind, you know, can only like or dislike person A at one particular time, right? So that means if your mind is habituated in practicing patience, right? Or love and kindness, yeah? It opposes anger. So when the mind of patience is present, or love and kindness is present, anger cannot come up, right? But practicing patience can never be an antidote to its strong desire. Only when you get uptight, but then it becomes anger, right? Yeah. If you meet, you want to have your object, but you cannot, and then anger arises, that's a different story. But the initial desire that comes up, practicing patience can never oppose it, right? So every affliction or every destructive emotion has its own uncommon antidote. You see? Yeah? So with emptiness, same thing. It should be an antidote to grasping at inherent existence. So technically speaking, we say the object of apprehension of the view of the transitory collection, as we just described, is a mind that focuses upon body and mind, the aggregates, and then thinks there's I and mine existing inherently, right? That's what's been held by the mind, or apprehended, or appears to the mind. So emptiness sees exactly the opposite of that. You know, inherent existing self, no inherent existing self. So if you have this mind of this lack or this absence of this concrete higher mind, that exactly opposes what the mind of ignorance holds. So that's why it's a non-affirming negative, it's just a void, and that's why it becomes the antidote. So that's why if you contemplate emptiness and think, oh, this is emptiness, and da-da-da-da-da, and everything in nature depends on origination, it's leading to its two, but not really holding emptiness with the mind. Right? So that means if you meditate, and you get a little bit of feel of the object of refutation, how the eye appears, right? When you get angry, or attachment arises, and then fear, see how it arises. Then you do this logic, one or different, or what you did this morning. Then you see, oh, it doesn't exist the way it appears. It's not there. Empty. You know? Then only it has the power to oppose ignorance. You see? So that's why it's very important to know. So you can see it's quite academic, but there's reasons for it to grasp, you know, to understand. That's why, it's not that difficult, right? What we did this morning and this afternoon is kind of course, it's all logic, but it's understandable to a certain extent, right? So then in the first hearing, it's kind of okay. But then in the second hearing, it's like, okay, yeah, maybe. And then in the third, fourth, fifth, slowly it comes. And same for us in the monastery. We do this 4 years, six days a week, you know? Yeah, so it's heavy duty, as we say. Yeah. So yeah, just don't get depressed. And imprints, I said before, today 58. So that means that very fortunate, because to discuss emptiness is, precious human rebirth is rare, you know, but to discuss prasangika is impossible, basically. So the impossible became possible today, you know, so very fortunate. So that also you should know that having thought about these things is shaking samsara, you see. So that's very fortunate. The essence of the Buddhist teaching, you know. So we couldn't conclude the whole text, but I just read from Tibetan. So then it's quicker. And then, because my blah, blah, blah is just, not much benefit, but the text is written by Nagarjuna, and in an unbroken lineage all the way to all his holiness. I received this chapter 3 times, 2 times separately, and once his holiness gave the whole text in Gomang, opening of the Gomang temple. Yeah, so I just read, again, this imprints, So that's the first verse, you know, if the self is the aggregate. So it talks, if you realize emptiness, then karma and afflictions get exhausted. Everything that arises from the conceptions of the afflictions, and we call it the net of the grasping of a self. All the things that comes from apprehension of self, karma and afflictions, you get liberated from that. So by emptiness it says, you stop the elaborations of grasping through existence and afflictions. Dago shegyan dagyuchin. Dagne shegyan tempakyur. So that's the teaching of selflessness, right? Sangye namgi dagda ni dame. Dame kame chegyan ten zöva jawa dobadi. Sengi chöyu doba so magye padam makaba chöyni namne dedan tsun. Tamje yanda yanda min. So it refers to ultimate nature of reality, being empty of inner existence, everything. Yanda yanda mayeni yanda min yanda min. It's a different explanation. You can read later on next to the commentary of His Holiness. And also, I said this whole text has been translated together with Lama Tsongkhapa's translation under the title Ocean of Reasons. One of the professors from Varanasi, together with a Western scholar, Gyengawan Samtala, together with the Western, I don't know what it was, probably by Wisdom, Ocean of Reasoning, commentary by Lama Tsongkhapa on this text, very, very good commentary. yanda min me yanda min de ni sang ye je den bo xian le xian le xie min xi ba dang zhe ben nam ge ma zhe ba nam de me den da de min zhe ya ni ya ni ke yi and de ni zhen ni do ge la ge la kang la kang la ten de kang kang jiong wa de ni ri xi de ni min de le xian ba ma yin che yeah this is excluding the different things what it's not de che che men dag ma yin Sangye jikten gonam gi Denba dutsu gyurwa de Dunchi mayin tate min Tseba mayin tak mayin So sangye na majung shin Nete namgyan seba na Ran sangye gi yeshi ni Denba meba rapto ki Kaza peda Dak on sorry Dak dan chu ta shejawa de rapje ba chokje ba os So that's yeah very short You see? Very short text, actually, but great meaning. You know, it's incredible. Meaning of his own is always, as I said, goes back to the source, you know, the Buddha and then Nagarjuna. You know? So it's very, yeah, so it's amazing. So thank you very much for your interest. Then we do a short meditation still or not? Yeah? Yeah, to conclude in a similar way. Yeah. So now you know everything about emptiness, so you can do yourself. I don't have to say anything anymore. Okay, 1, 2, 3, there we go. So yeah. So we do a similar thing as this morning. Yeah, just sit comfortably, you know. Yeah. So 9-round breathing we skip, because we don't have 1 hour time, you know, right? Yeah. So just to get a little bit of an guided aspect of emptiness. Yeah, so now we try to do one and different. This morning, remember, we did cause and effect relationship, you know, dependence of that. So now we do analytical meditation, one and different. Yeah, so first, breathing. We do anyway, but this concentrate and then count the breath from 1 to 10. The two mental factors, you know, has been explained. And try to focus the mind, yeah, to concentrate. So do that for about a minute or two, the counting of the breath. So when the mind is a little bit settled down and a little bit of concentration, then we visualize Sakyamuni Buddha in front and surrounding yourself sentient beings, individuals experience individual suffering and think, without understanding emptiness I will not be able to help them. So ask Buddha for blessing and inspiration. From his heart comes white light, yeah, taking the four potent powers into account, then we purify all negative deeds. So we can use time, as well as specify obstacles, and in particular, the obstacles that prevents us from the insight into emptiness. Yeah, so we do the visualization of the white light for about a minute or two. And then think that your whole body is filled with this white nectar light, completely purified. All obstacles have been pacified. So also, that's very important to have strong faith that happened. Very important. Yeah. So think that. And then, with the same intention, we request the Buddha in front, and this time, golden nectar light comes from his heart, crown of your head, fills your whole body. And by receiving this, you know, you get all the potentials for the realization to come about, in particular, the realization of emptiness. So also that we do for about a minute or two. and think that your whole body is filled. This yellow golden nectar light, completely mixed with the Dharma, suitable to meditate. And then, we do the analytical meditation. So try to recall a moment, you know, somebody criticized you. There's reason it's more fresh, or heavy impact. In the past could also be helpful. So a person who criticized you, or strong desire for something, I need this, kind of very strong, or anger, aversion, I don't like this person, you know, very strong protection on the eye. So or fear, you know, you're almost dying, you know? So try to see, you know, how the eye appears. Whatever is a suitable picture for yourself, you have to check. So then try to see how it appears, and then focus on that. Keep it clear. And so let's do that for about a minute. Then, without losing how it appears, in one corner of the mind you hold it, and with the other corner of the mind you analyze. If it exists exactly the same as it appears, it should be one or different from body and mind. So that's the first logic you analyze. And try to become convinced and ascertain or understand there's the only possibility, one or different, without losing that picture of how it appears, right? Yeah, so try to do that. This is the first logic. So without losing how it appears, you know, the eye, if it fades away, you have to go back again to how it appears. When you get criticized or anger, or you know, you have to go back and then get it clear again. And again you say, okay, it's either one or different. Yeah? Then you see if it's one or different from the body, right? First step after that kind of first logic of one and different. And so we check. If it's one with the body, it should be many, because there's many parts of the body. But it appears to be one. So it cannot actually exist the way it appears. That's what we try to find out, right? So maybe then it's different from the body. But if you put the body away, the eye doesn't appear like that anymore. It's not inherently different, because we say my arm, my leg, my this, my that. So without losing the object, the refutation, or how the eye appears, we analyze one or different from the body, come to the conclusion it doesn't exist in either of those two ways. You know? So try to do that for about a minute or two. Try to see, it doesn't exist in that way. Can it be one? Can it be different from the body? So then, maybe the mind. If it's one or different from the mind, check. If it's one, it should also be many, because as many moments of mind, as many aspects of mind, mind and mental factors, etc. So actually, so without losing how it appears, right? The object of refutation, how the eye appears. See, actually, oh, it cannot be one with the mind. Maybe it's different from the mind. Then we say, my feeling, my thought, it cannot be inherently separate from the mind. So actually, it doesn't exist being one or different from the mind. So analyze that for yourself. So then, the overall conclusion, without losing how it appears, right? So otherwise you go back, how it appears, and then you see, okay, should be one or different from body and mind? Is not one or different from body, not one or different from the mind? It doesn't exist the way it appears. It's empty, you know? Right there, Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, right there. It's a very interesting comment. Why there meaning? On top of the aggregates, the mere imputed aggregates, there's nothing to be found. There's no I, no inherent existing I. The inherent existing I does not exist. At that time, a kind of void should arise. And then you focus on that for, you know, a minute or so. Yeah, so try. Then the Sakyamuni Buddha is very pleased with your intentions, and he comes to the crown of your head, becomes smaller and smaller, and then descends. Yeah? And then descends to your heart, becomes one with your own mind, the level of your heart. You can feel a little bit kind of bliss or blessing, good feeling there. Yeah, do that. Alright, so then we can stop. Yeah, so we're late. Time goes. So, just for auspiciousness, I'll just read again from the beginning, chapter 18, then. To meet, you know, the teachings of Nagarjuna in the future. Kelte pomba dagyena, kedan jiva chenda gyur. Kelte pomba dalashin, namlashin, pomba tseni meba gyur. Yeah, so it's for auspicious sake. 10 questions. Oops. People okay still or not? People. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking. So there's a question that the yogic middle way school, yeah, the Svatantrika, Yogacara Svatantrika. And Sitamatran school, yeah, a further elaboration. So, further elaboration, does that mean a weekend course, or a week, or a month, or a year? Yeah, it's very interesting material. So, the person who wrote this question, if he's interested then, and has studied a little bit of tenets, then in Nalanda, I mean, I will be sitting here, but I think 12, 13, 14 of June, we're going to go over the 8 points of unique points of Madhyamika from the Prasangika point. So then those things will be covered, because I cannot explain it in the 3 minutes that is left. Yeah? And it's quite elaborate, and it's, yeah, it takes time. Yeah, is that okay? Next time, make a prayer. we make a prayer. Now I look there, you see? You see that? Because now my screen is here. So normally I look there. So we do the next time. Because that takes more time, and whereas people get more confused, then it is not needed if not already confused. The emptiness handout, it says that Buddha, that I already talked about, the three turnings of the wheel is a question regarding that. It says here, the three times, or the three turnings, in order to reach disciples with different interests and capabilities. It's true, because the Buddha is so skillful, to teach to the level of understanding of what they can comprehend. So that's why we can see there's no contradiction in the Buddhist teachings in that way, because the Buddha taught in accordance with the level of development of the disciple. Like His Holiness Dalai Lama, same thing. When His Holiness gives a talk to college students, He doesn't talk about Prasangika view, right? He talks about destructive emotions, how to deal with anxiety and fear, Then when He sits in front of this incredible assembly of scholars, His Holiness is very detailed, precise. The differences between the yogic middleway autonomy school and the Chittamata school, very clear. So that means you have to teach according to the disciples. If I, yesterday and today, if I just go and read from the commentary straight away, then I think people will all fall asleep. So I have to juice it up, as they say. I hope I juice it up enough that people don't got too much, confusion and being bored. Yeah. So that's what the Buddha, that's the example the Buddha showed. You have to try to, teach. That's what the Buddha did, according to the level. So that's why there's no contradiction, because one point the Buddha taught the coarser form of self, the next time more subtler one, the next time more subtler one, right? So the same truth, the first noble truth, or the first turning of the wheel, quite simple, generally speaking, compared to the second turning, right? So the second turning talks about emptiness, but the mind realizing emptiness, the ultimate nature of the mind, is not that easy. Many people like to do Dzogchen Mahamudra. It's very inspiring. Those teachings are amazing, inspiring, extremely beneficial. If you're ready for it, it's like the red arrows, it's fast. London, I heard them. I was in retreat, and I can look up a little bit just in the, And then actually, I only saw the red, white, and blue colors mixed up, left behind. So fast, they know exactly how to operate this kind of machine that goes super fast, right? So if you're not trained, it will become a mess. You're not able to fly 9 of those planes next to each other, So that means they have to train to do that. So for us, same thing. So the Buddha is so skillful. So they first have to go to, when they're little boys or girls, they have to go to kindergarten, then they go to secondary school, they go to college, university, and then later on they study how to fly a plane. So for us, same thing. We have to first understand the course aspects of the Buddha so skillfully, explained it in different levels. That's that question. Then, if nothing exists from its own side, using the analogy of a river to avoid using the term my mind stream, which is where our karma is being so-called recorded. So if we commit negative action, we can expect the results at some time in the point in the future. That's true, right? Or in this lifetime or another future lifetime. So if the mind stream is like a river, like Tenzin Namnak was explaining, that's what is it that separates our mind stream from another, like two rivers. Changing from moment to moment, but one river is separate from another river. What is that that is separate? That my karma is different from your karma? A very good question. We have individual streams of consciousness. Each of us have individual streams of consciousness. So if you study karma, one of the four points of karma is, first definite, then increase, and it doesn't get exhausted until you receive experience the result, or it gets purified or destroyed, right? And then there's three, and then one other one is regarding this point, is you cannot experience the karma you haven't created yourself within your continuity of consciousness, right? So that means there's two individual stream of consciousness of two beings, you know? So, and why is that so? Because the continuity of one seed, let's say the seed of an apple, and let's have the seed of a pear, right? It's two different seeds with two different potentials. They meet similar conditions when you put them in the ground. So from the point of view of external conditions, exactly the same. But there's two individual seeds which produce two individual different types of tree, right? So that's true for human and animal. So if you have two seeds of an apple, you know, you put them in the ground, exactly the same conditions, it will grow in similar apple trees, but they're different, right? One has more branches like this, another leaves like that, it's all different, right? So same for us. In one way, we have individual streams of consciousness, but we have common aspects, we have common afflictions, you know? So in that way, this individual streams of consciousness, which is there since beginner's lifetime, you know, so that never mixes, you know, until, and when you achieve enlightenment, you know, then it's still individual streams, though the qualities of the mind are the same. So when you, for example, study Ma Mudra, you say this in the end of the lineage prayer, it says, you know, your holy body and my body, your holy speech and my voice, your holy mind and my mind. Then you say, may they become one and non-dual, you know, it's a prayer. So that means that at the time of Buddhahood, we have the same qualities, you know, so that's why we do this prayer, you know. So that means you try to mix in the sense of wanting to have the same qualities as the Buddha, you know, or the teacher, the one with the Buddha in this way. So there's not only an uncommon Buddhist view. One of my friends in Bangalore, who's quite well versed in the Hindu philosophy, he said we have a similar interpretation of what, generally speaking, they call universal consciousness. And there's a lot of talk in the Hindu tradition. So there's two explanations there as well, he said. Very interesting. I was very interested in that aspect, because he says from the point of view of practice, you like to be your mind one with that ultimate quality of love and kindness, or, you know, wisdom. You know. So that non-duality of the two is not that the two mind streams merge together, but you get habituated to a similar type of quality. You know. So that's the, with Buddhahood, same thing. Our consciousness is there since beginner's lifetime. It's individual. That's why when I get a pizza or pasta, I'm quite happy. You know? Some other people prefer masala dosa or samosa. You know, it's kind of, though the pizza, the pasta, and the samosa or the masala dosa is exactly the same, but one person experienced in a different way than another, right? So that proves we have individual experiences of similar objects. You know, so that proves also that there's individual forms of karma to experience something in life. Some people go through different traumas or addictions, and they have completely different experiences, right? You know, same for the experience in the train being 32 hours delayed, so 84 hours record, you know, 32 hours. Then I was in Amsterdam one day, Schiphol Airport. I just was in time to in the train. I was going back, I think, to my mother. And these days they have this over-year card, this kind of a way to travel, this kind of, you know, the public transport. So I was just in time, but I forgot to take an extra 2 guilders, I think, or 2 euro already, yeah, because it was a special train that goes faster, so you have to pay another extra two euros, so I forgot. So then the conductor came and looked at me. I was dressed, of course, like this, not with this one, with the red sand. And then I slowly told her, you know, said, sorry, you know, I just jumped in the train. And she said, oh, you can do it in Breda. It was the place where I get out, just Breda. And then I said, oh, can I ask you something? I said, yeah, sure. Are you a Buddhist monk? It's a very nice question, anyway. So she was interested. Yeah, so then when I left the train in Schiphol Airport, I think it was Schiphol, I think Liang, I think he dropped me off. Yeah, I was sleeping with Liang, one of my friends in Amsterdam. So then the same train, I was just inside and door closed. Like, you know, 2 seconds. Maybe the train was 2 seconds early, closing door. And on the other side was a young guy who also wanted to go in the train. And I was so annoyed, he did a side kick on the door and almost broke his leg in the process. You see? It was only 2 seconds. And my train example is 32 hours late. So that means that how people experiencing different things, though the situation is exactly the same, they have a different feeling with it, right? So that's true with food, that's true with difficulties in life, with suffering, you know? So that means we have individual streams of consciousness that experience different things. Anyway, that's maybe enough for to answer the two rivers of two individual streams of consciousness or countless. C'est ça? Yeah. Allez. Hi. Yeah. I'm ready. You see? Okay, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you for hosting, you know. For me also, first Zoom experience. So, a new event in my life, you see. Yeah. So they say thank you to all of you. Yeah, they cannot hear, yeah, because I have everything in here, you see. Yeah. Yeah, hosting and helping to coordinate questions and things. Yeah, thank you very much, Steve and Randy. Yeah. And everybody else. Because, yeah, we run a little bit less than yesterday and day before. But, yeah, incredibly fortunate, all the people. Really, to listen and think about. I don't have any qualities to talk about these things, but at least we have an opportunity to discuss, you know. So that's very fortunate. So if you try to put a little bit more effort towards studying it, contemplating it, then definitely one day will come, you know, understanding. And then that's the start of ending samsara. That's the start of ending all the problems. And then you can help others. Then it becomes really, if you have understanding of emptiness, probably then you know how to help others. You know? You develop, get more interest in Lamrim, do some retreat now and then with those practices we talked about. Then it's just going upwards, you know. Karam Tirimshi, this is the last thing, very inspiring. When I was in Serra, and we studied for 20 years, so after some time, you get a little bit kind of, you know, want to do something else, because we always want to do something else. And things don't come. The grass is always greener at the other side of the fence, right? Let's see. So I had the same. So I went to Karam Tirimshi, he was always so kind. Me to come and came by. Once I was translating, he just got up and got us tea. It's kind of mind-boggling, you know. So then, Karam Tirimshi used to say such down-to-earth advice. He said, "You know what you do? You study for a few decades, then you try to put it into practice for a few decades. You do that for a few lifetimes, and the realizations will come." You see, that's very, very simple, profound, and down-to-earth reality. So that's why we're here, you know, to put imprints. And the more imprints, the more seeds that are planted, one day they produce the results, right? So thank you very much for all the interest. And maybe we meet again somewhere. It would be nice to meet in the real world. But yeah, it was for me a good experience to see you all over Zoom, you know. Yeah, I was a bit kind of, whoa, how is that going to work? But it went very smooth. So thank everybody, organizing, helping out, and all the interest. Because if there's no people with interest, then also I won't be sitting here, you know, thanking everybody in all the places everywhere. Okay, thank you very much, and hope there was some benefit, and then maybe we meet again somewhere, someplace, sometime. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we now we do the Lamrim prayer. Yeah, I know in a second. Yeah, 35. So then, dedication is like a prayer, but it's a bit more. Because a prayer is just thinking, may, you know, I, that is empty of inherent existence, achieve nirvana or achieve enlightenment, right? That's a kind of a prayer. A dedication, you say, by the power of these virtues, may I achieve nirvana, it's mainly filled by the mind or enlightenment. You know? So, meaning there's something to be dedicated towards to something. So that means there's a root of virtue you dedicate. You know? So eventually, all the rivers will end up in the sea. But if you canalize them, it goes much faster. You see? So that's why dedication is very important. Yeah, you see, Lama Zobe Rinpoche made countless dedications, many other Lama Tsongkhapa in the prayer festival, countless dedications. You know? So it's very important. Yeah. Yeah, so for my two collections, oh, sorry. This is a new translation. For my two types of merit, faster space that I have amassed from walking with his efforts of this practice for a great length of time. May he become a chief living Buddha for all those whose minds, wisdom eyed, is blind by ignorance. Even if I don't reach this state, may he be held in love and compassion for all my life's ministry. May I find the best completed graduate parts of the teachings, and may I please all the Buddhas by my practice. Using skillful means drawn by the strong force of compassion, may I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings. With the points of the paths as I have discerned them, may I behold Buddhist teachings for a very long time. With my heart going out with great compassion, in whatever direction the most precious teachings have not yet spread, or once have spread have declined, may I reveal this treasury of happiness and aid. May the minds of those who wish for liberation be granted boundless peace, and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time. By even this graduated path to enlighten complete is due to this victorious conduct of the Buddhas and their sons. May all humans and non-human beings who eliminate diversity and create conductive conditions for practicing the excellent paths never be parted in any of their lives from the purest paths praised by the Buddhas. Whenever someone makes effort to act in accordance with the tenfold Mahayana virtuous practices, may he always be assisted by the mighty ones, and may an ocean of prosperity spread everywhere. Yeah, so then... Yeah, and the remaining one we just think and I recite. So think that by having studied, contemplated, may no even one sentient being be left out to meet these kind of precious teachings in order to mature the minds in the paths of liberation and enlightenment. Then also the precious gurus, like Sonin's Dalai Lama, Lama Zobe Rinpoche, and all the other teachers teaching the true path to enlightenment, and may they have long and healthy lives, and may all their holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. Then may all sentient beings, without exception, generate this mind of renunciation, understanding ignorance, afflictions and the results, and generate a wish to be free of that. Yeah. And may all sentient beings, including all the world leaders, all sentient beings you can think of, may they generate bodhicitta in the mind, and may this bodhicitta, mind of enlightenment, never degenerate but increase more and more. Janju Sanju Rinpoche Magya Panang Yeguchi Kiba Nyamba Meva Yangone Konde Bhavashu. And then also, because bodhicitta is not enough to achieve enlightenment, renunciation is not enough to achieve liberation. So may oneself and all sentient beings quickly understand emptiness, get the realization of emptiness, and may never degenerate and increase more. Toni tawa rinpoche ma kye pana kye kyochi kye pa namba me pa kone gonde pa pa sho. And then oneself making the prayer, and the prayer itself and the aim we pray towards to or dedicate towards to is empty of inner existence and in nature of dependent origination, so that's why the prayers also come true for that purpose. Understanding that, I should say, may oneself and all sentient beings quickly progress on the stages of the path to enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, and may all the people who are sick or ill or have obstacles be freed of those difficulties in life, especially now the coronavirus. May all those who are sick and ill or in fear or deserted or, you know, whoever suffers, you know, not only the suffering of suffering, but all types of suffering, be free of that. And all the people who ask specially to pray for them, may all their wishes according to the Dharma be spontaneously fulfilled. And those who passed away, may they find a good precious human rebirth or be born in one of the pure lands. And also try to dedicate, we also dedicated already for the long and healthy life of the gurus, and in particular their holy wishes to be spontaneously fulfilled. And many of their wishes had to do with spreading the Buddha Dharma, helping sentient beings, and also different centers, you know, within the FPMT or outside of the FPMT, those who teach the true path to enlightenment, and may all the centers be, you know, without any obstacles in helping sentient beings. And in particular, Land of Joy and Jamyang London, yeah, helping out with this event, may also all obstacles be eliminated for all the projects, according to the wishes of Rinpoche, be completely established without effort. You know, and all the people who come in contact with the centers, either to Zoom or to the internet or physically, or we hear, dream, think about these places, may their minds be always full of happiness and peace. May they find everything they're looking for, and may they quickly achieve the state of enlightenment. Yeah, so try to dedicate that as well. And all the people who help out with sponsoring events or centers, you know, or volunteers at the different centers, may all those people also quickly progress on the stages of the path to enlightenment. So whoever dedicates time or energy, you know, towards these kind of projects, may also those people quickly progress without any obstacle to the path to enlightenment. Yeah, so try to dedicate. Gewa gunda yanda lama da dama jira pya da mo jesi saran lam gi yunda rapsoni doje cham gi ko pa Okay, thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. Vielen Dank. Hartstikke bedankt. That's it, more or less. Ciao. Vielen Dank. Ciao. Ciao. Bye. Arrivederci. Okay. Done about. Yeah. See you. Okay. Next time. Yeah. Happy. Enjoy. Enjoy. Yeah. Emptiness. Make it enjoyable. Okay. Okay. Bye. Everybody say bye and thank you to everybody. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Bye.